who's that guy, Andrew somebody, wrote for Village Voice. He created Counterpunch. I remember approaching him at a bookstore in New York, I don't know, mid-90s, say, and putting him on, doing the NLP, talking about what he's interested in, and then saying, well, have you read Arthur Croker? And he said, no, what's that? And I think another guy who ran the bookstore said, oh, we occasionally have his books, and he said it to the Andrew guy. Who is that Andrew guy? Anybody know? Famous journalist on the level of Christopher Hitchens.
I don't know the name.
Croplin, Choplin, Bookchin. I have to look that up. So what am I saying there? That's prophetic. Talking about, oh, I was just bragging about, I knew the darker situation, darker than anybody. But as Deb Aaron, a member of Club 22 and my Toronto lawyer, used to say, well, Bob, you tell us this horrible news. How come you're fucking laughing? Well, that's a good question. What am I laughing about? Well, I knew I'd be solving it somehow. Later, I had inklings I would because Carolyn was solving it on the health level with the mirror. We hadn't got to mirror in 84. That doesn't happen until 1990. But that's an incredible phenomenon, you know, actual treatment for AIDS. But
Andrew Colburn.
Right. Did it take you a while, or would you have said that as soon as I brought it up?
I looked it up.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, how did you find that? Where would you look? Billy's Voice?
I put Andrew and Counterpunch.
Oh, great, yeah. Now, he died, I think. Look at his obituary. I think he died shortly after I spoke to him. Cockburn, C-O-C-K-B-U. Burned his cock.
I think he's still alive, isn't he?
I don't think so.
No?
Unless his brother died. There, I don't see him doing Counterpunch or anything. I haven't seen him in years. I'll look it up here.
Isn't he gay?
Maybe. Didn't come across.
I got a different one. Here's another one.
Yeah, there's two of them. He was a friend.
He's Olivia. He's still alive.
That can't be. Let me see.
He's Olivia Wilde's father.
Who's that?
She's the one who was with that guy from the guy from Saturday Night Live, and then she left him and went with Harry Styles.
Oh, okay. So she's an actress.
Yeah.
So looking at this, his wife, Leslie Colburn. This is it. I remember there was another Colburn. Now, is this guy? Yeah, I don't think he did a Frontline documentary. So how do we get the other guy? Billy's Voice, I'll put in. Andrew Cockburn, Billy. Okay, is this guy that I'm looking at, is he Billy's Voice? Let's see.
Oh, and by the way, Andrew Cockburn's daughter, Olivia Wilde, took a break from Harry Styles about 2 years ago.
She left him too.
Yeah, they took a break. They're reportedly taking a break.
Would you say they're calling it that?
They were. Olivia and Harry are reportedly, quote unquote, taking a break, unquote. They're taking a break after 2 years. They're pressing pause. They're pressing pause on their romance. Pressing pause.
You have a knack of trivia, finding interesting trivia, Greg. Now, let me just tell you.
I'm always pressing my pause on my romantic interest.
Yeah. Now, it's really important. Here's Andrew Colburn, born in 47. The Colburn, I'm thinking, is older than that. But his alma mater is Worcester College, Oxford. And I just noticed that the other day. That Worcester, David Worcester, is an important name in fucking British history, for fuck's sake. So Worcester had the right name. A major mentor, you know, competing with Garrett Dean. So we're looking for the see. Colbert
Are you thinking of Andrew Sullivan?
No, that's the gay.
That's the gay guy.
Yeah. Now, see, Colbert wrote for years for Village Voice. The Colbert I'm looking at here, born in 1947, there's no Village Voice in his fucking record, so he's not the same guy. And the Alexander Colbert. Oh, maybe it's not Andrew, it's Alexander Colbert. Let's look that up.
He's an Irish American. He's an Irish American journalist. He's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Died maybe by 2000.
He's dead. 2012.
Yeah.
Dead.
Oh,
you killed him, Bob. You killed him.
And he held on for a while.
That's his brother. That's Andrew Colbert's brother.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew he had a brother. So it's Alexander and Andrew. So does it say here? They won't fucking list. He's the radical Alexander. So the Wikipedia censors him. It says Andrew has two brothers, Alexander, 1941, see, older than 47, to 2012, and Patrick Colbert, also journalist.
He was in the Village Voice from 1973 to 1983.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a major journalist. He's equal to Hitchens. It's just that Hitchens gets into the Vanity Fair bullshit level. Colbert couldn't do that. He remained a leftist, extremist, purist. And does he create Counterpunch? He may have. Let's see if that's he's June 6th. He dies on McLuhan's birthday in 2012. Now, I was just going to say, before I saw that these fuckers, all of them, Hitchens, everybody, they couldn't get into McLuhan. They couldn't get it. And so they remained limited and died. I was at 2000 or so, I went to the New School of Social Research for a panel. They had George Steiner on there. A famous English critic, I think he's English, good friend of McLuhan's, wrote essays on McLuhan in the early days. It had, I've told the story before, but Mel's put it on the record. This is a good stretch of Bob here. There was a guy, when I was standing there looking at people before the panel started, there was a guy so agitated I couldn't fucking believe it. He was talking to someone else, and he was gesturing and like he basically looked like he was having a breakdown. And he was talking away there, and I said, what the fuck is this guy? And then I didn't know he's on the panel. He's on the panel once the panel gets laid out. And when he talks, he's still fucking doing it. A panicky fucking nut in terms of presenting himself in public. Guess who that was? Slavoj Zizek, for fuck's sake.
I hate that guy.
You all hate all the cool guys who make it. Yeah, Zizek.
What? Zizek or whatever his name is? GJ?
Yeah, Slavoj. It's like slave. Slavoj. Zizek. Yeah. Z or Z I Z E K.
He's the only Serb I don't like.
Yeah, I guess he's Serb. So he.
The only one I don't like. Everybody else I like, not him.
Okay. Now because he brings in pop culture stuff, the McLuhan content level, not McLuhan, that you don't know anything about and you don't understand why they are trying to do McLuhan, but they do it on the content level. So you think they're like avoiding the issues, but, or whatever you don't like about him. But, you know, he's a ridiculous communicator, but he's a professor. And, so he was on the panel. Christopher Hitchens was on the panel. George Steiner was on the panel, and a couple other stalwarts, maybe not as famous, but maybe famous teachers at New School.
The usual club.
So a very
club.
Interesting panel. What?
The usual club.
Yeah. Lefty fucking guys.
So-called lefty.
Yeah. Yeah. The virtual lefties. The ones who are journalists. You know,
oh, yeah. Quote, unquote.
To be ignored. So I get to speak at different points, ask questions, opinionate during the panel. After it, Steiner is there, and I talk to him and talk about McLuhan, and then he turns and he says, "Why the hell are you here?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "This is nothing. Why would you take a time out of your day to come listen to us people?" This is the famous George Steiner. Around that time, he was featured as a major guy at the Metropolitan Library. He did a whole series of lectures. Ted Carpenter went to it. I remember talking to Carpenter about it. Carpenter knew him. He's a big phenomenon. Look him up, Steiner, S-T-E-I-N-E-R. Semi McLuhan, I like McLuhan, but, you know, had to maintain his critical bullshit and detachment. But he tells me I'm a fool being there listening to these idiots. He had no self-conscious about it, including himself. And he's pretty old, so maybe he figures he's out of date. And then Christopher Hitchens comes up to me and says, you talk about McLuhan. What about Harold Innes? So we start talking about Harold Innes. And he's impressed about what I know. And he said, I'm thinking, you know, and this is, you know, the internet's booming, a new media thing that's threatening the literate journalist. So he knows he's got to get hip to media or something. So he says, I need to read Innes. He didn't want to read McLuhan. He wanted to read Innes. And so I said, well, I can help you with that. So a couple of days later, he left a message on my machine. In Upper East Side, we're on East 91st Street, and I call him back, and I never get an answer. I call back, say, hey, let's talk, and he never followed up on it. So that doomed him. You know, he dies a few years later, but he didn't get into the work, and I never saw any in his stuff in his writing. Not read much of it. And he started bashing the religious people, the nun. Who's the nun that was famous out there? He was a world figure. He did the book criticizing her. Maybe Maggie knows. Maybe someone's posting it on the...
Mother Teresa.
Yeah, Mother Teresa. He went after her rather than Innes. So I'm talking to Steiner, Christopher Hitchens. And then a guy walks up to me, introduces himself. He's Paul Ryan. Now, Paul Ryan was a priest in the mid-60s, in 66, listening to WBAI, but he's getting alienated from being a priest. So he sort of half quits. I don't know when he quits, but he hears about McLuhan at Fordham. So he goes up to Fordham to hang out with them. And it's a Catholic college, I guess. And, he has knowledge, well, a priest who's into McLuhan would impress McLuhan. So Paul Ryan, probably born in the 40s, he becomes sort of semi-staff member under Edmund Carpenter, Ted Carpenter. He aligns more with Carpenter than McLuhan, but he was there and participated, like Gerd Stern, in the McLuhan reality. It's like Paul Ryan eventually would become a friend of Gerd Stern. He does Carpenter, and Gerd does McLuhan, you know, pen pal, so to speak. So Paul Ryan, I'd heard about. So when he said that he was Paul Ryan, I said, oh, I've heard of you. So we became friends. He was teaching at the new school, I think. And he dropped out of Priestland. And he became a, quote, artist, a video artist. So, like Harold Channer, the same time at the Howard Wise Gallery, I think in 69, they definitely would have had Nam June Paik there. He was the first guy to get the camera off the boat from Japan or something. Harold was the second or third. Paul Ryan was one of the first guys. So they demonstrate their videos at the Howard Wise, W-I-S-E, Gallery. Look it up. It's a famous introduction of video art. Or TV as art, so to speak. And so Ryan goes on, and I think he moves up to the New Paltz area, where Channer ends up in the early 70s, and Ginsberg and them hang out. It's the rural area outside of New York. Bohemian Place, and he starts his little TV show or making video art, and he becomes a known video artist. And yeah, I have his book he did. But occasionally, being a hippie kind of guy, ex-priest, he drops in and out, so he's, I think he lives in the country net. So he's not a complete urban sophisticate, so he misses those connections for his career. But he died a few years ago. But he came up, he recognized that I knew something about McLuhan and that he definitely would be interested in that. So I met those three guys at that thing. So that was good. And so Alexander Coburn, what were we saying? Let's see. What else, Greg, do we say about him? You know, what's his name? Christopher Hitchens knew the longtime editor of Vanity of Vogue. Anna Vogue, what's her name? Anna Winklow or something? They came over to New York together, or knew each other, were friends. So he had that connection to the magazine world. So look, so Coburn, Alexander, Scottish-born, Irish-American, political journalist and writer. He's brought up by British parents in Ireland, but lived and worked in the United States from 1972. Together with Jeffrey St. Clair, they edited the political newsletter Counterpunch. He also wrote the Beat the Devil column in The Nation magazine and another column for something called The Week in London. Let's see. He was the eldest son of a journalist, Claude Coburn, a former communist author, and his third wife, Patricia Byron. She wrote an autobiography. His ancestral family included Sir George Coburn, 10th Baronet, who was responsible for the burning of Washington, D.C. in the War of 1812. His two younger brothers, Andrew Coburn and Patrick, are also journalists.
This is my favorite part of this. This is my favorite part. It's under the political views and activities, anti-war positions. In a January 1980.
I scroll down. Yeah, I see it there. Yeah, good. Okay.
In a January 1980 Village Voice column, Coburn criticized the U.S. media's coverage of the Soviet-Afghan war and described Afghanistan as, quote, an unspeakable country filled with unspeakable people, sheep snaggers and smugglers. I yield to none in my sympathy to those prostrate beneath the Russian jackboot. But if ever a country deserved rape, it's Afghanistan, unquote.
You see why he didn't make it in Vanity Fair?
Coburn later said that his comments were, quote-unquote, satirical, quote-unquote, tasteless, and that he, quote, shouldn't have written it. It was a joke, unquote.
That's amazing. Criticizing the coverage of... So that's 79, and the Soviets supposedly lose that. But that's in the middle of the Bolshevik-Rockefeller battle, so there's other levels of what's going on in Afghanistan that they're not covering.
Yeah, that's when Gorbachev's making a whole bunch of bad decisions that'll bring down the Soviet Union.
Yes, he's duped by the Skopsis, the Christian castrated ones. He gets sucked into their plan to replace the Bolsheviks, which they do by 79. So the Christian, now there, I think you would explain it, that the Christian Skopsis removed the Russian forces. They didn't care about an image of losing because they were dismantling the Bolshevik Empire after they kicked them out. That's why they withdrew. And then they get Gorbachev and they fucking collapse the whole goddamn Soviet Union. Like you say, they ruined the Soviet Union. Yeah, because they didn't like it, Greg. And they put their man, the KGB guy in. Now, I remember the Evergreens predicting at some point after the wall went down, they said the KGB will take over. And that's Putin, right?
Yes, so.
And then Putin's still in charge. He's got, and I was reading.
All I know is that Gorbachev did his job in the Soviet Union, finished the place off, and then got invited to Reagan's funeral.
Yeah.
As an honored guest with Brian Mulroney and Margaret Thatcher.
But who spoke at Reagan's funeral?
What?
Who was the major speaker there? Mae Brussels' father, the rabbi.
No.
Yeah. And she was pissed about it. We ought to get that recording. I can find it in the archives. We should fucking play that. She is pissed because the governor is Pete Wilson. She's got a problem with him. Then Reagan dies, and her father, who was a famous rabbi, Einstein, all the Jews, the famous Jews of the world, went to him. He ran the major synagogue in L.A., so very influential guy. And, you know, well off, I assume, because their grandfather or father had started Macy's. No, I mean, I.G. Magnin, a famous Macy's-level, you know, store on the East Coast, on the West Coast. More on the West Coast than East Coast, I think. But May, she said her father was a cool guy, did not agree with what she did or said, but believed, as a liberal humanist, I guess, that she had the right to have these opinions. So did not bother her and, in a way, supported her if she needed money or something after she got divorced or something. So he was a nice guy as far as she was concerned. But Reagan dies, and May is celebrating it. And then she has to deal with the fact her fucking father spoke at the funeral. Now, wait a minute. This doesn't make sense. She dies in 88.
Yeah,
this doesn't make sense. So who died and her father spoke? Oh, yeah. Whoever died. No, her father died. That's what happened. He died. And Reagan sent a old buddy message to Mae Brussels, to the family. Maybe not Mae's address, but somebody in the Brussels world sent a message saying what a great guy he was. And so Mae goes on the radio pissed off that her father was eulogized by Reagan. She said, this is the real split between me and my father. He stayed in that straight world and you know, got honored for it. And she didn't like the people honoring. I think Pete Wilson, maybe Pete Wilson spoke at the fucking funeral. Oh, yeah, she went to the funeral and had to sit there while Pete Wilson, who she's complaining about on the radio the week before, is addressing the funeral. I don't know if he knew anything about Mae Brussels.
He participated in the inaugural ceremonies of Presidents Richard M. Nixon and Ronald Reagan.
Oh, he's looking up Rabbi? You're looking him up?
Yeah. Rabbi, his name is Edgar Magnin.
Yes. Now, what did he participate in?
He participated in the inaugural ceremonies of Presidents Richard M. Nixon and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, the two California guys. Oh, yeah. No, he was a big deal in the establishment. And he had to be, you know. He was responsible for the Jewish reality in L.A., which is Hollywood, right? So he... Bay, as she was born in 1922, so like when she's 10, she's cognizant, around her house are the Warner Brothers and all the other fucking film moguls and Einstein. She grew up with these people in her home. That's pretty incredible, eh?
He distinguished his 69-year tenure at Wilshire Boulevard Temple through close ties with the motion picture and television industry. Had any money, he knew Fritz Freeling.
Yeah, he knew all these cartoon guys you
case. I bet he knew the Jewish ones.
Yeah, where that you sent me the thing you explained some more details about people that the daughter was saying. What is that Facebook page? I forgot to look at where you write this.
What are you asking me?
You sent me I'm on your subscription list or whatever. You did a post 5 days ago describing the people you knew to the daughter of one of these famous nobodies or famous hidden cartoon animus. You just wrote, you're always doing this on that page.
What did I do? I don't remember this one.
You explain all the people you fucking knew to the daughter of one of these well-known fucking animus.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah, maybe. Did you just do that or was that something from the past, 10 years ago or something? I don't know.
I don't know. Mariana Givens?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you, like, you actually write that? Like that?
Did you just write that this week, Greg?
Oh, probably.
Okay.
But I know I mentioned. Well, she's always, and I knew her father. I worked with her father.
I know. You go into the details of all these people. What is that Facebook page? How can I monitor it? What is it called?
What? You mean the Facebook of that woman?
Oh, it's her. It's her personal Facebook page.
I guess so. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't use Facebook that much, but I responded to something that she put on. She's always putting things on about related to her father, but she doesn't really know much about the animation business. So she's apt to draw conclusions and say things that, you know, aren't exactly accurate.
Yeah, you go in there with this very detailed correction.
Or suggestion.
I saw one previous one by you, like 6 months ago or something, where you did that. You know, you went into some obscure details about these people that you knew about.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's a woman who, if I had to take a guess, I'd met her. I didn't really take note that I'd met her, but I went to her father's birthday party. I flew out there in the late 1990s, and they had a big family fight near the end of the thing. I mean, it was really embarrassing.
During the funeral.
During his birthday party, like at the end of his birthday party, there was some like family dispute.
Right there in the middle of the
party. I mean, it was, and after it, I was hanging out with her father and his wife. So Mary and I were there, and we left with them.
You're on opposite sides of the fight.
Well, I didn't know what the fight was about. And Bob, the guy that I knew, he just goes, you know, I don't worry about this kind of stuff. They're all fighting about something. So I probably met this woman, but she's, you know, it's like she's growing up with a father, and, you know, he had a job, and it just happened to be in cartoons. And you know, when your father is somebody who is, you know, working with famous people or is a famous person or whatever, you sometimes don't keep track of it. I mean, he's just your dad, right? He's your dad, and you're dealing with him as a child and growing up, and he's still your dad. And I think that she got to the point where she sort of realized how important he was. Because as a child, I don't think how could you know how important your father was? And so it came to her, and then she's trying to make it. I think she's trying to make up for lost time a bit. And he's dead now. And she was quite close to him in his later years. And he lived to be about 100, I think. And got as strong as an ox. And
let me give you a parallel to what you're saying. Mary McLuhan doesn't know anything about her father. Goes to college in Windsor, Assumption University, where McLuhan taught in 1944 to 1946, and so she's running around being a pretty model, and she ends up in Banff. She decides not to go back to her sophomore year at university. She wants to go to San Francisco because, this is 65, 66. Things are happening. A young lady would like to go there, hitchhikes down there, and she meets Howard. So she gets to San Francisco and calls up her family, her mother and father, and says, probably just the mother, and says, hey, I'm in San Francisco. I got no money. What should I do? And so they said, go knock on the door of Howard Gossage, who's the famous San Francisco advertising guru who created McLuhan's fame on one level. He's the famous guy that got him all these magazine articles that Ted Carpenter writes about. He witnessed all the scheming about this. So she lives with the Gossages, like, let's say, 65, 66, 67, and one day she's going to some job she has, and she's at a magazine stand, and there's a picture of her father on the cover of Newsweek magazine. She says, what the hell is this? And she looks at the article, and it says, what if he's right? And she has this hilarious recounting of it, which she did for me, where she's saying, what the hell? They're wondering whether my father is right. Exactly the same thing you're talking about, Greg. She had no clue. See, then there, all of a sudden, it's like you finding your NDP father on the cover of Life magazine. It's like, what? What are you doing, Dad? Like, how'd you do this? Right?
Yeah.
So then, when Marshall dies, Terry McClune, no, Stephanie, a younger sister, Mary and Terry are twins, a younger sister, a Studio 54 dancing disco duck kind of person, well known, did TV journalism, she decides, and she's that in the 70s, her father dies in 1980, so in 81, 82, she says, what the hell did my, why is my father famous? So she did all this research and went to all the corporations that had interviewed McClune because of her name and connection. They gave her the footage, or at least excerpts of it, and she made a great documentary that Norman Mailer is in, Trudeau's in it, and it got really good reviews. It came out in 1984. But that's another example of Stephanie not knowing. And in an interview, she admitted this. She said, I decided to find out what the hell all this noise about my father was, even though she was a TV journalist. And talking about content as opposed to formal concerns, formal media concerns. So she talks about how she was very impressed with her father once she started to read it and make this documentary. And it was a big learning thing. So you're right, Greg. A lot of famous people, their kids don't know what they are.
Yeah, they're just their dad.
Yep.
You know, someone chewing you out about something, or you know, trying to eat your turnips.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate if you, you know, I mean, if Mae Brussels was trying to get her thing going today, if she was trying to make a name for herself as a parapolitics researcher and you know, someone a go-to expert on you know, secret Nazis and stuff, people would just assume that people would very much just assume that she's controlled opposition of some kind the instant that they find out, oh, her father was like speaking at, you know, Reagan's funeral and stuff. Like, yeah, okay, but I'll just dismiss that person as controlled opposition immediately.
Which he didn't. We should correct the record here.
I want to respond to this, Brian.
Right.
You're saying that, yeah, people would see her as CIA.
Yeah, or they wouldn't even listen to her shows first.
Right.
These days, your biographical... the discrediting, potentially discrediting details of your biography, usually get around the world while your commentary has yet to put its pants on, you know?
That's right. Good point. Yeah, great. What are you saying?
I just wanted to correct the record. Just, he did not speak at Reagan's funeral.
Oh.
Because I know Bob said
he's dead.
I know Bob said
that.
Yeah, he was dead.
Yeah, Reagan acknowledged his funeral.
Oh, sorry, Reagan's inauguration. Same difference for Mae Brussels' father.
That inauguration will kill anybody. That inauguration will kill anybody.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, but family members of anybody who was at Reagan's inauguration are all guilty until proven innocent.
And the one guy that is a scandal that was there that nobody knows about, really, unless you're European, is Licio Gelli, the fucking kingmaker of all of it. He was at, Reagan invited him to his inauguration.
Of course, he invited that. He invites Italian fascists to his. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes complete sense.
Nazi. They say about Gelli that as you go up the chain to get to who's the Illuminati, the last guy you see before it gets to the Men in Black and the unknowable guys is Licio Gelli. And like, he helped the communists in the World War II and he helped the Nazis. He was a tetra manager. He was in the tactile middle. He was orchestrating everybody. And he continued for 40 fucking years. Remember, I have an article I handed out at CKLN in 88. He's running for parliament. But all of a sudden, you know, they found out he's running and murdering people. and Bologna station gets blown up in 1980, and he's a drug dealer and all this stuff. So he has to run to Uruguay or someplace. He had to ditch his campaign. And it's like the second time he's escaped from jail. He escaped from jail, and then he runs back. And when I was with Derek DeKirchhoff, talking to his Italian wife, I brought up Licio Gelli and all that, and she was pointing out to me that, you know, he's a communist, and that he runs a county. He has a whole area, I guess, he's in charge of politically, even though he wasn't a member of Congress, but he had a mafia enclave. But so he escapes in 83 or so because he's the guy they expose with the Banco Ambrosiano scandal, and they think he's part of killing of the 30-day Pope, not necessarily the shooting of the John Paul in a few months after Reagan was shot. So he escapes to South America, to the Nazi land, and then he comes back, and then he's running for parliament or government or something there. And he has to escape again, and then he gets released. I don't know if he escapes, and then he's brought back and put in jail, but then he gets out again, and then he dies. But they say Licio Gelli is the linchpin to the invisible people. He's the last guy. And so he probably created, so he's a Bolshevik, you know? He's running the Reagan fucking administration. He's a Dr. Peter Bolshevik.
I've never heard of Licio Gelli referred to as a communist before.
Right, no, he helped everybody in the World War because he was running the World War. He was inside the negotiations. Oh, and I didn't finish. So an ex-LaRusci, William Engdahl, did a really good book proving with his resources that Bush and them knocked the wall down. There's famous footage. I remember seeing it. When the wall came down, they go to the White House or somewhere. There's Bush, and he's looking like he has the deer. What is it? Deer in the headlights look. And everybody's saying, what do you think of this? And he says, I don't know. And so it's famous for people claiming that Bush didn't know it was coming. His CIA didn't inform him of what was happening. And he's totally clueless and doesn't speak clearly and properly or intelligently about the whole phenomenon, which the whole world was excited about. And so there's famous footage of him. You might find it. Well, the reason he was fucking acting dumb was because he caused it, for fuck's sake. And
Bob,
towards Ukraine, Greg, and they fucking blow up Croatia and Serb and concentration. They do all that to get to the Baku oil fields. BAKU. That's what they want to get. They were stolen by the Russians, and they're anti-Russian until they get those oil fields back. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I find it difficult to believe that Gelli had anything to do with communism. I mean, that is. I'm going to challenge that one.
Well, so what? So you go ahead and write your essay for Atlantic Monthly.
So I'm just going to say that, just for everybody's, just get it out there, this guy was a solid, solid fascist.
Well,
going way back.
Communists were fascists.
No, they're not. No.
No.
Yeah.
They're extremely
fascist. Super villain. I think it's a good word.
I'm going to challenge
you. He's a super villain.
I'm going to challenge you on that one.
Well, go ahead. It doesn't matter. You're just making yourself ignorant. You're talking on a limited journalistic pink level. Yeah, he was a fascist. But look, what about the managing of the global membrane, for fuck's sake, where there's everybody's in the room. Fascists, Jesuits, Rosicrucians, British intelligence. Nazis and Bolsheviks and the Mossad. That is the secret government, all the intelligence agencies in the Android meme era, 1960 to 1990. That's why when 9/11 happens, you have some say it's the communists did it, others say the Nazis did it, others say the Jews did it, others say British intelligence did it, and what's the fifth one?
You did it.
And
the
Vatican,
one is that you did it.
The Jesuits.
Some said
what?
Yeah.
Some said Bob.
Bob did it.
Well, Bob did. No, I didn't do it.
Yeah, you did. That's the fifth one.
No, I didn't do that one. Whoa. That was so hot.
Bob came so, we came so close to getting him to confess to doing 9/11 just there. Okay. Almost
right,
there. Almost
right there. they could edit that. They could. I go, yeah. And then I catch myself, right? So they're going to just edit it right there.
Yep.
I go, okay, fucking Bob did it.
You know how we brought up...
I say that I didn't do AIDS. That's what I used to say. I no problem with the JFK assassination. Nobody cared about that. But you get into AIDS, there's too many people.
I don't agree with it. You did AIDS. I draw the line at you doing AIDS.
You read my diary. The guy who set it up fucking came to me in my diary in 1971. And then that's in the congressional record. And I gave that to Zappa, and he ends his book with that thing. He's quoting the document that's in a book called A Higher Form of Killing. He ends his autobiography with that fact that he knew about, but when we interviewed him in 88, in October, that he was preparing the book, and he says, do you know the higher form of killing, blah, blah, blah? And I said, yep. I said, can you get it for me? He said, yep. So we got it, xeroxed it, and Jerry took it to him. And so he ends his book with that point. So, yeah, I knew stuff, Greg.
You know, you were talking about, we were talking, or in passing, about Mother Teresa?
Yeah.
Yeah, here in the Wikipedia page about Licio Gelli. In 1996, Gelli was nominated as a candidate for the Nobel Prize in Literature.
Come on.
No, it's here. Wow. Support... they needed supporting people, and one of the supporters was Mother Teresa.
Hey, Christopher Hitchens.
I told you she's a gutter. She's a pure gutter snipe, that woman.
Yeah.
And get this. On the 11th of February 2006, Licio Gelli, who's a full-on criminal, right? Donated his quote-unquote non-secret archive, unquote, to the state archives of Pistoia as part of an official ceremony held under the patronage of the municipality. However, the municipal administrators of Pistoia preferred not to take part in the ceremony. However, the so-called 500 directory remained secret. 426 files addressed by Gelli to businessmen, politicians, companies, banks, clergymen, etc. Guardia di Finanza and investigators have never managed to find its contents.
What do you mean? He donated it, but you can't get to it.
Yeah, he donated his non-secret archives, quote unquote.
Oh, but there's a secret.
However, the so-called 500 directory remained secret.
I mean, that it's gathered someplace.
I mean, I can't believe that guy didn't rot in jail to his death.
Well, he kept escaping, Greg. He had work to do. Now, let me tell you this. You read my diaries, and you see in 66 or so, I'm assigned, as part of Secret Council 10, to go to America on behalf of the Vatican, say, to create a Vatican branch of the student movement, a Vatican-controlled infiltration of the lefty-dominated SDS and all that. And so I'm told to go find someone that could lead that. And in the diary, I don't have the name. It says something like unnamed American, no, Western businessman, something like that. So guess who that is?
Yeah.
Who sent me to create LaRouche, it turned out, when I discovered him.
Gelli?
Yep. And I don't think I've ever admitted that.
The Gelli thing?
Jeez,
Gelli,
man.
Sent me into the counterculture. Great.
On the run, Gelli escaped to Switzerland, where he was arrested on the 13th of September.
Greg goes back to his monologue.
Arrested on the 13th of September, 1982.
Who's on the run, Greg?
Gelli. On the run, Gelli escaped to Switzerland, where he was arrested on the 13th of September, 1982, while trying to withdraw tens of millions of dollars in Geneva. It's detained in the modern Champ d'Olon prison near Geneva. He managed to escape and then fled to South America for 4 years. In 1984, yeah. Jorge Vargas, the Secretary General of the Union Nacionalista de Chile, a short-lived National Socialist Party, another Nazi, and a former member of the Movimiento Revolucionario Nacional Sindicalista, declared to La Tercera de la Hora that Jelly was then in Pinochet's Chile. Finally, in 1987, Jelly secretly came back to Switzerland in the car of his lawyer, Marc Bonhomme, and surrendered in Geneva to investigative judge Jean-Pierre Tremblay. He was wanted in connection with the 1982 collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano and on charges of subversive association in connection with the 1980 Bologna railway station bombing, which killed 85 people. He was sentenced.
I cited that half an hour ago, Greg. See,
yeah.
My stuff.
He was sentenced to 2 months in prison in Switzerland. Yeah, all he was involved in connection with killing 85 people, 2 months in prison. While an Italian court in Florence sentenced him on the 15th of December 1987 in absentia to 8 years in prison on charges of financing right-wing terrorist activity in Tuscany in the 1970s. Jelly had already been...
That's where he controls Tuscany. That's the area of Italy.
Jelly had already been sentenced in absentia to 14 months in jail by a court in San Remo for illegally exporting money from Italy. I mean, has anybody made a movie about this guy? Are you allowed to make a movie about
this guy? It's the third Godfather. Greg, it's the third Godfather movie.
Yeah, I've got to see that. I got to watch that movie.
Yeah, no, it's based on a book, British author. What'd you say, Brian?
I have also never seen the Godfather movies. I should.
Oh, it's a good
one.
They say it's not good, but it's good. It's based on David Yalop, a British writer, the Protestant gang, I assume, smearing the Vatican. It's called In God's Name.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I knew about that book. And I have it. And I was out in California at the home of the man who designed Yosemite Sam and Sylvester and the Pink Panther and all kinds of characters. And who was, you know, a layout guy, maybe the greatest artist at Warner Bros. And so I'm,
What's his name?
Holy Pratt.
Oh, okay.
Holy Pratt. So I'm at his house and I'm just standing there looking around, you know, looking at the artwork on the walls and stuff. And then I see in his bookshelf, in his bookcase, In God's Name.
And you knew about it?
Oh yeah. I didn't say a word though. I didn't make note of it, but I didn't say something to him about it, but it was there.
Okay, so I'm away from the. Am I a faker now because I'm away from the computer?
Oh, you're away from the microphone, all right.
Yeah. Okay. A second. So now there he is in 87. I get that closer. There he is in 87, escaping or whatever. What happened in 87?
Yeah, he came back.
Yeah.
He came back to Switzerland in 1987. He basically escaped
He serves 2 months?
He was sentenced to 2 months. I don't know whether he served anything.
Okay. So then... What after that? I just told you, in 88, with all that hanging over him, he runs for parliament. I have the article. Or whatever they fucking call it. Not Congress, I guess, parliament. He's running. He's a respectable politician.
Listen to this. Jelly's extradition in February 1988. So they Switzerland eventually agreed to extradite him to Italy, but only on financial charges. They wouldn't extradite him for the Bologna railway station bombing, of course, right? It's pure fascist provocation, and which they blamed the communists on, right?
Okay, Greg, what's the date of the Bologna thing?
1980.
Yeah, what date, month?
It was 2nd of August.
I am in Italy in August 1980. Somebody should look into that. I'm in the Secret Council 10. That's the famous the Olympics got canceled in 1980. Or what happened? The Russians didn't go or the Americans didn't go? Remember that?
Yeah.
And we're over there in 1980 in Italy. I knew it was very close. August 2nd, did you say?
August 2nd, 1980.
Yeah, that's an important number. That's Philly Markowitz's birthday, but it's also the day Hussein went into Kuwait in 1990, August 2nd. And there's a couple other things that happened on August 2nd. So that's interesting. So anyways, when you die, go look at the Akashic Records and see where I was on August 2nd.
At 10:25, a time bomb hidden in an unattended suitcase detonated in an air-conditioned waiting room at the Bologna station, which was full of people seeking relief from the August heat. The explosion collapsed the roof of the waiting room, destroyed most of the main building, and hit the Ancona Chiasso train, which was waiting at the first platform. The station was full of tourists that Saturday, and the city was unprepared for a major disaster. Many passers-by and travelers provided first aid to victims and helped rescue people who were buried under the rubble. Due to the large number of casualties and an insufficient number of emergency vehicles available to transport the injured to hospitals, firefighters used buses, private cars, and taxis. Some doctors and hospital staff returned early from vacation to care for the victims, and hospital departments, which were closed for the summer holidays, were reopened to accommodate the casualties.
They shut down in Europe in 1980. Now, Greg, you're going on about Delhi not being a communist. And you're talking to somebody, what about the fact that Licio might have been on the Secret Council 10? You're talking to somebody who could name as a colleague. He's the guy who told me to go and find somebody, and I found a guy named Lynn Marcus, who turned out his real name was Lynn LaRouche. And got him to start a counter to the SDS. And in any history of that period, different levels of accuracy, but they all admit that the riots at Columbia, which are happening right now again, today, you know, supposedly, those riots in May 68, the same time as the Situationists in Baudrillard are doing their thing in Paris, the famous anti-de Gaulle stuff, LaRouche's people are behind the scenes more influential than Mark Rudd and the guys who got the cameras, you know, who made the news figures. The LaRouches were there. And they started doing their thing in New York at that point. They went to the renter strike and helped that. So that's where LaRouche started to be an impact in Dobbstown, let's say. New York is Dobbstown. So, Greg, I'm telling you, try to get out of your categorization inadequacies. Okay?
Well, what do you mean by that? I'm saying that he's a fascist. He always was a fascist, and he carried on being a fascist.
Let's call him authoritarian.
I'm not
going to
call him authoritarian. He wasn't really.
They're not limited to countries and political categories. They are Big Brother, for fuck's sake.
He limited himself to those kind of categories. He's the one that went
No, he never said anything. He's a nice guy. He thinks.
Well, that's what they said about Biden. Job. That's what Colin Jost said about Biden at the press.
That's what they say about Pierre Trudeau.
You're a good man.
You're
a good man.
You're a good man.
My grandfather says you're a good man. Did you see that thing? Did you see that correspondence?
No, what is it?
Did you see that correspondence dinner thing?
No.
Oh, you got to see that. That's really bad. It's this guy from Saturday Night Live who's, he's married to Scarlett Johansson, I think.
Hmm.
So he gets up there and he starts slathering over Biden and talking about his grandfather.
Do you mean sincerely praising him? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh yeah. Yeah. At length saying, basically he did it through the actions of his grandfather, through the actions of Colin Jost's, grandfather. He says, my grandfather, he was good to me. He did this. He did that. He was a good man, et cetera, et cetera. Then he says, and one of his proudest moments later on in his life was voting for you because he said that you, President Biden, you are a good man. It was really bad.
Yeah, Colin Jost. Yeah, comedian. It's funny, comedian is one word for it, it's a little bit more of a, sometimes he's going for laughs, sometimes he's just a point man on certain narrative management tasks. The last time that I caught Saturday Night, Colin Jost, he has the segment where it's like the more straight one-liners based off of news stories, I think the Weekend Update section where they sort of pretend to be news anchors. And it was quite remarkable because Colin Jost, at first the segment started out, I'm like, wow, this is actually one of those good examples of how Saturday Night Live is not as biased as they say. But it started out with a joke about how Trump has been, Trump had just been ordered to pay, I forget, $100,000 or whatever it was that he was sentenced to pay like $60 billion. And this Colin Jost guy, he kind of made this face and he's like, really? OJ only had to pay like a fifth of that for murdering people. All the stupid SEALs, the libtard fans of comedy shows are like cheering at the big fine levied on Trump. And it's like, oh yeah, you think it's cool that he's being punished five times as hard for this as for murder? Okay. Anyway. Maybe Saturday Night Live isn't quite as biased as they say. But then, on the same segment either, they played a clip of Trump saying, I won't let them debank you, talking about debanking. Trump, there was some speech where Trump brought up debanking and they're going to try to debank you, I'm the guy who's going to save you from this new regime where they're going to, your bank will disown you if you say something politically incorrect, and Jost's reaction to Saturday Night Live, and it's not just whatever, it's not all Colin Jost, but he's the one who delivered it. It's like the blah blah blah. There's other people involved in this, but his response to this clip, they even played the clip, but his response to it was to pretend he acted like the bank was like nonsense babbling. Like the way that they tried to humor out of this, like, was to act as if like, whoa, the senile old man is now like, there's literal garbled nonsense coming out of his mouth. And he's like, debank, eh? Like, careful there.
Grandpa.
I'll have to call the ambulance to take you to the hospital.
It was like playing it for the Saturday Night Live audience as if, like, if you are a good audience, you have never heard of this concept of debanking. despite the big scandal from years ago in the world, people were debanked for participating in a protest. Like, no, this doesn't even exist. That's a nonsense word. Like, we might have to call the brain police on you if you're talking about debanking. I was like, wow, Apologos, like, that's so much worse than your job description, I thought. Like, I thought people were able to, like, yeah, it's a sellout gig being on Weekend Update, and you have to, like, pass all, like, regime messaging or something. But, I don't know, Colin Jost seemed like, somehow, that, like, that line was, like, more extreme than I'm used to, and he seemed to be... seem to be feeling.
Well, that whole show is run by the Canadian Lauren Michaels, so look no further than him.
Right. I want to say, Greg, just a second, I have muted everybody, and I see Nick Dilley, Alyssa's friend's here, and he's a new guy. Maybe we'll let him see if he has any questions. And Julie Dickey is here, but I had to mute you, Julie. You're making noises, so if you stop making whatever noises you're making, then we can unmute you. So everybody's welcome to speak, to interject here. We've had us for 3 hours, 2.5 hours, something like that.
Mainly long you.
Stretch here. Yeah, 11 until 1 and 2, yeah, 3.5 hours. Yeah, mainly I did a special, Greg.
Yeah,
very important. Brian appreciate it. It was all done for Brian. He could appreciate it.
Was that whole
okay? Let me come in, Greg. No more monologues.
What monologues? What monologues did I do?
Well, he was reading.
That's a rhetoric question, so I'm not going to answer it.
Hey, the word's rhetorical. What's your name? Dimitri. It's not rhetoric. It's rhetorical. Okay.
Rhetorical question.
I don't think I did. I don't think I did any monologue. I think, as Brian said, I was reading something.
See, Greg, you don't have to answer it with another monologue. That was a rhetorical question.
That is a monologue. That's a comment to make.
No, you shouldn't have said anything. Don't
Are you triggered?
I think Dimitri, didn't you say something about doing a monologue? I'm glad we got that out of the way. Isn't that what Dimitri
said?
Hey, Dimitri.
I have to meet Dimitri. He's just being so good.
Dimitri, what are you getting in the archive? What's Dimitri getting in the archive these days? I was curious what Dimitri's been getting into in the archives these days, if anything.
Well, we can't talk to him right now. He's out of control. Let's go back. Greg did a good job monologuing on Leecho Jelly from Wikipedia.
No, it wasn't a monologue.
It was a great monologue, Greg. Just
it wasn't a monologue. I'm not even accepting. I won't even accept praise for that and calling it a monologue.
It was a communist monologue.
Hello, everyone. And
a monologue.
For today. Brian, you need to calm down. Fix your phone. We miss a lot of what you say. It's breaking up.
I'm too calm. Okay.
Yeah, you got a problem there. Okay, Nick, did you want to say something?
Hi. Hello, yeah, this is me, Nick, Alyssa's friend. I just want to say thank you very much for making me feel welcome. And if it's all right with everyone, I'll just continue to listen for now.
Yes. Now, did you just come in 5 minutes ago?
Yeah, I did just come in a minute ago. Yeah.
Okay. Well, when the archives go up, you know, within 24 hours or so, listen to the first couple hours. I made a very good statement. Background. You heard a lot of it, right, Alyssa?
Yeah, with Kate.
Yes. To understand where I come from and all that, it's all spelled out today. We did a special, Nick. So.
Well,
you do your homework.
I look forward to listening to that. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we'll let you be quiet. All right.
Thanks.
Anybody else want to speak?
Thank you very much.
Bob.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
I posted on chat one of your notes in your diary. And it's from June 30th of 1980.
Yeah.
Do you want me to, here, I'll just read it. So LaRouche says,
yeah.
Steinberg tells me you've got some interesting new information. Flaps. My sources tell me to watch for the growing influence of the Orthodox Church in Moscow. So I've begun researching the old Third Rome plan, and I'd like your help. LaRouche, tell me what you got. Tell us more about that little note, will you?
Oh, you're asking me.
Yeah. Can you expand on that one? That's the same. That's the summer of 80.
Yeah. Who's Ned? How do I know the name Ned? Ned, how you doing, Ned?
Ned was talking last week towards the end of the show.
Oh, Ned's the guy. Yeah, the other new guy. Right, right. I was looking at my birthday video and, there was a Ned there or something. That's where I got confused. Why is this familiar?
No, that was not me.
No,
that was not me. I can't wait to re-listen to this. Unfortunately, I was in and out, but there was an overload of information, which I thought is valuable. So it's definitely something I want to scrape back through later. However, I did want to say that I left earlier and came back so I could mute myself. For whatever reason, I cannot mute myself from my phone, but I need to stay muted for like an hour. And then I'll be back. So I would just like to listen.
Okay. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, you're right to pay attention to what I did, despite Greg's objection. It's a lot of good history there. Okay.
Greg had a lot of good info, IMO.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just muting Ned, and then somebody in North Carolina, 980, who's that? I don't recognize that number. You want to say anything?
Hey, Bob. It's Classic calling from North Carolina. How are you?
Well, it's been a long time for you to join in and speak.
I know.
You're always hiking, running, going up mountains. For frick's sake, I saw the picture the other day. You guys went
but
up
guess
some
what?
Of these mountains, right?
I fell down the hill hiking in June of last year. And it put me back like 6 months, and I'm just now recuperating.
Wow, and you did that long hike the other day.
Yeah, so now I can. So I healed my arm, took a lot of magnesium, a lot of electrolytes, and healed it on my own, never even went to the doctors.
What happened? You just bruised it, or did you break it, or what?
No, I was running around a tree, and it went downhill, and I tripped over the stump, and I fell so hard. But as I fell down, it had an incline that went down. So my whole right arm went out to try to save myself, and I tore, I don't know what I did. I never went to the doctors, but I tore everything in it. And I was lucky I got home. Somebody took me home. And I literally was in bed for a month because I was in so much pain. So.
Wow.
I juiced a lot, and I took lots and lots of magnesium, lots of the Relight, and I kind of fasted for a good week. But after a month, all my inflammation, I just thought about I need to get rid of the inflammation because that was causing so much pain. And then the pain just gradually went away, and so I've been having some PT on it, but it's good to go now.
That's pretty good. Congratulations. When you say electrolytes, do you mean the other products, Carol Cells?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on all of them. And, yeah. I took a lot of restructure. Yeah, I take everything. And I basically lived
good.
Off of that. You know, I always take it, but I kind of, like, stopped eating food for a good month and kind of lived off of all the minerals. And
what did you do for your immediate diet while sitting in bed?
Well, like I said, the first week I couldn't move. I was in so much pain.
Yeah, so did you sit there and listen to radio or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I do. And I do work from my computer as well. But, yeah, I'm always listening to something, some kind of weird podcast.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you entertained yourself in that month.
Yeah.
A lot of information.
Yes. Yes. In my mind, I knew.
The last time we talked, like 8 years ago or something, you had an accent back then.
And the right side of my body now has 3 accidents, and that's what I did. I triggered it when I fell. And, I keep on falling on the right side of my body. I don't know why that is, but I guess it means something, right?
Yeah, you'd ask Alan about total biology on that. That's total biology stuff.
Yeah. But you know what? As I was lying there all that time, all I knew was, I'll resolve this and I will heal. That's all I had in my mind. So, good to go.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Carolyn had the same problem the last couple months. She hurt her right side, I think.
Oh, she did?
Hmm. Oh, yeah. She fell at the store, the farm store, and banged her right arm on the concrete and huge bruise, swollen. Had to sit there for a week or so, and with the products, it got fixed pretty quickly. But it was pretty painful and pretty black and blue, the whole arm.
Well, yeah, I had the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she good to go now?
What?
Is she good to go now?
Yeah, she's all better. But the thing is, I say you get hurt, and that forces you to call. Because the last time you called, 8 years or so ago, you were recovering from something. And so you called to talk. You needed comfort. But you should come here more often, and you won't have to go through the dramatic extreme buildup that leads to an accident.
I do listen all the time, so I get informed that
we
got
to come in and talk. No, we don't care about listeners. We want people to talk. I mean, you wrote some good comedy skits, but you stopped that.
Yeah, I got busy. Yeah, that was really fun. I wouldn't mind doing that again. Because really,
maybe you could make fun of the Andromeda trick or something, you know? Do that.
Oh, yeah. I think I started doing that. That was pretty fun. Yeah. When are we taking off, Bob?
Oh, we don't
on
know.
The ship?
It could be 1,000 years. Could be in 6 months. Oh. Who knows?
And then I haven't got my bug out.
We don't have any say. I have a say over it, but I'm not aware of what I have to do. It's in the realm of no time, so to speak. We're already doing it, you know.
Yeah, that's what they say. Everything is happening right now, right?
No, everything happened. There's no
everything
now.
Happened.
It already happened. There's nothing now.
Oh. So that's mean in the Bible, everything is already done. We're just reading up on what we already did.
Yeah. Seems it's called past pluperfect. That's why Ian always calls it past pluperfect.
Pretty crazy, the things that are happening. I heard the other day that there's a volcano is going to appear out of the Antarctica. Has Ian talked about that?
Yeah, that's where the in 1958, the National Geographic or Encyclopedia Britannica erased a description of Antarctica from that point on because a deal was made with the Pentagon aliens that came over with the Project Paperclip Nazis to have nobody fly over a big chunk of the Antarctic. That's the alien place. That's where they do their stuff. They've been here reverse engineering things and all that. And helping everybody, much they could. And so when Tucker Carlson went to Russia, Obama's double, headed down to Antarctica for conferencing about what the hell is going to happen to Tucker in Russia with Putin or the ex-Putin. The point is that this section, you can look it up, of the map of Antarctica, there's a lot of activity happening there now. I was on TikTok last week. Huge weirdness in the oceans between Antarctica and South Africa. And then there was a guy who did a video from Cape Town, and the ocean was going out to sea backwards. And he says, what the hell is that? He was freaking out. He showed the footage of it. The tide, or whatever you call it, that's coming in, crashing on the beach, was not doing that. It was going out.
So could that be
that? Distortion of the dynamics of Earth.
So it could be that volcano, then.
Yeah. And there was another TikTok that there were huge 80-foot waves off Van Antarctica. So the Pentagon aliens are up to something, you know, getting ready for the big aliens coming out of the Eastern Gate or something. Get ready for Bob's press conference.
Is that the good aliens? Is that the B-1?
None of the aliens are good. They're just stronger, and they're all beholden to me. They want access to ION, and they'll do anything to suck up to me to get to ION, so they don't kill me. You can kill a lot of you people, but not me, because they're here to have a good time, have a good meal, and benefit from what ION's going to teach them, and also to help us back. The big ones are, their ships are 26 miles wide. They're going to hover over 22 cities when they make their appearance. But they're going to guide us through the Stargate, the black hole in the sun, which you see footage of every now and then. And we're going to go through that and then get to Andromeda. So they're going to direct us there. They're not going to Andromeda themselves. They're not human. Or they're not from Andromeda, which is what humans come from.
Well, they can't be all that bad if they're going to direct us back, right?
Well, they're still going to do what is not good. Even though they're helping, they are doing other stuff that humans wouldn't like.
So pretty much we're all still screwed, right?
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah,
bad,
until you get off here and get back to Andromeda. If you make the ship, pay your $30 to Reverend Stang, you get a good chance to get back.
I'm on that ship.
Yeah.
I see a lot of TikToks, a lot on Antarctica. And the other thing is the Tartaria, right, is coming up, right? Everything.
Have you heard what Ian says about that?
I'm not sure what.
It's the only civilization that Ian appeared to before now. And they appeared and helped the Tartarians make all kinds of incredible stuff. And then they fucked up with their greed or something. And so ION did a mudslide on them, and they're buried in the Soviet Union all over the place. Their houses, their buildings are underneath. And Greg saw some of them, or reflections of them, and other exciting stuff when he was there in Russia a month ago.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, because I've been seeing some TikToks on Russia where Tartaria is huge there. I mean, is that where initiated in Russia?
Where what was initiated?
Tartaria.
Yeah, it comes from that area. I think it's a huge area. And, it's in historical records in different places. But it was a magical civilization, because Ion was directing the technology they were using.
So the new Putin, whoever he is, obviously is, it seems like he's a good person over there now, protecting the people. Does that have anything to do with that?
No, there's no good people in the public sphere that went to the journalist dinner that Greg was talking about with Biden. All people are alien. All figures of authority are aliens. Mm-hmm. They all work together. They're waiting to have a fight with the Eastern Gators. That's all they're doing, preparing the world for their fight. And they will distract people with wars here and there and other disasters like 83 tornadoes. All of the what's in the news is controlled by the tech body, which is used by the Pentagon aliens. So the Information Society is something to be ignored as much as possible. And anybody on there is suspected to not be a human.
I believe that.
Putin and Biden were killed in the summer of 2021.
Yes, so I heard that. But yeah, you can't, I think people have come to a stance now that they can barely scroll or watch anything on the news.
That's right.
I think people are just like, every time they do, they just get sick to their stomach and they go have fun, do whatever they do because they know that it's the same old thing.
Yep. Well, they don't want, you said they go and have fun? Did you say that?
Yeah, you know, whatever pleases them in life besides watching this stupid stuff.
Yeah, that's all dandy, but that's idleness. They need to interact with Bob, talk to Bob. They need to be understanding our stuff, taking the prize. That's the only fucking task that's worthwhile doing now. And you're given lots of opportunity to do it. You don't have to work. They give you fucking basic money, so you buy your products. And you listen to our free show. You know, it's all a lot of slack given out here. And I don't know how many people are taking advantage of it, but there's a lot of assholes that are not.
Bob, what I can say is that the Biden that got...
Just a minute, Greg, we're going to hear... Brian said something was breaking up. What'd you say, Brian?
Oh, I was just going to riff on the phrase taking advantage, because it's people don't know how to take advantage of it somehow. You have to try it first, you know, and see.
Well, you take advantage by getting stuff for free.
Well, yeah.
That's how you begin. Yeah, Greg, what do you think, Greg?
Well, you know how you said that Putin died and so did Biden?
Yeah.
I don't like the guys taking over from Biden.
None of them are likable.
But I like the guys taking over from Putin.
Greg. They are aliens.
I don't care. I like the new Putin. But I don't like the new Biden.
Hey, Bob, nice. I have a question about... What about Mr. Trump?
Trump is the only fucker who's not dead. That's what's amazing. Bob, he's on the products. He's smart, so he's doing well.
Well, what I mean is the different Trumps that are out there, because so many people now on TikTok are saying, they'll put like three pictures up. This is a Trump that was at this rally. This is the other Trump. One is skinnier than the other. So it's obvious that they have clones out there, whatever you call them, or duplicates. So where is Trump at while all this is going on? And if they fight for
He is probably right now either listening to this or has a person listening to it. He totally focuses on us. He occasionally meets with JW. I've never met him. Talked through him, but I don't need to meet any of these people. I'm the hidden ground of everything, so I got 26 bodyguards now. And Trump is very tuned in. You're not seeing Trump in the media at all. There's no Trump trials or anything.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He knows if he went to the trials, he'd be killed. So he's laying low. He's hiding.
But it's basically all a movie anyway, right? They're just dragging all this on just to keep us busy?
Yeah. It's a bad movie. Bad porn.